Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And today I'm interviewing head winemaker for Pierre Spar. It is Corinne Perez. And also during the interview, early on, you're going to hear another voice. And I should have introduced him right as well, but I didn't. Bad on me. Francois Fisher, who is in charge of a lot of the marketing and like the export manager for Pierre Spar. And so he comes in and he'll help with a couple answers, and I don't address who it is. Bad on me. And I talk about it during the interview, and I make fun of myself. So it is with these two individuals for the pod. And one other thing, at one point she's going to talk about, Corinne's going to talk about when she joined up with Pierre Spar. I believe she says 1919. It was 2019. And the funny thing is, before we did this interview, Corinne was worried about her English. Her English is great. Her English is fantastic. You know, it's far better than my French, which is basically non-existent. Really, the only issue, and I probably should have caught it anyway, was one or two times with numbers. But just to get that out there. And what I appreciate about doing this interview was I was like interviewing winemakers for a winery that I've already been drinking from. And if you live in Ontario, I bet you have tried some of the whites of Pierre Spar. And they're all about Gewürztraminer, Pinot Gris, Riesling, and they've got some really good Cremants as well, some really nice depth to it. And I think my message to anyone out there, if you haven't tried these wines, absolutely give it a shot. I mean, first thing with the Rieslings, you can get a good golden apple mineral citrus Riesling for about $20, maybe even under. And that can be hard to do, especially from that region. And there's, you know, Reserve Grand Cru versions as well. I say give them a chance. And then also with Gewürztraminer. Gewürztraminer is one of the most interesting wines, and it is polarizing. It is either you love it or you hate it. And my feeling is if you hate it, fine. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm a fan of it. I don't drink it all the time, but I always enjoy when I do drink it. But because it is this very powerful, spicy, almost meaty wine, you know, that doesn't always pair with everything, but certainly pairs with a lot of spicy foods, I get it if someone says they're not a fan of it. As I talk about all the time in the podcast, my philosophy, or one of my philosophies, is if you like everything, you love nothing. But I would recommend to try it. And if you haven't tried it in ages, give it a new swirl. Try different Gewürztraminers, and the Pierre Spar one is excellent, and it's consistent. And like, for instance, in Ontario, about most of the cases, Pierre Spar that's brought into Canada, most of it is sold in Ontario. So clearly it does well with this region. So again, the last thing I want to say is that I apologize for the quality. I think this one might have been on my end. I'm not sure. When you're doing these Zoom interviews, and we've seen this with other ones, it's just sometimes it's hit and miss with the connection, and there can be little breakups. And on this one, it was my end. Like, I'm going to tell you, I edited out a lot of me talking because there is some strange, aggressive static going on with so much of when I talk. In fact, I'm going to even do just a mini extra on this as well. I spend a lot of time trying to edit this and clean it up and tighten it as best I can. So apologies for any of the audio quality, but you'll really like Corinne. You'll learn a little bit about the wines of Alsace and the joy of Gewürztraminer. So much like with wines from that area, I say give it a shot. Just like give this interview a shot. It's definitely worth it. Thanks so much.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. So excited today. From Alsace, the head winemaker for one of the more famous ones, wineries, Pierre Spar. We're joined by head winemaker, Corinne Perez. Corinne, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
You're welcome.
I would love to start by hearing more about your journey and about just your days studying agricultural in Lyon and your time as a summer harvest intern in Beaujolais.
You know already everything. Okay, so yes, I was born in Lyon quite a long time ago, and Lyon is a big city near the Beaujolais, at the beginning of the Rhône Valley. But my family was not involved at all in viticulture or winemaking. But I went to the Beaujolais for a job student. And at that time, I fell in love with this world of wines. I discovered everything, and it looks to me very passionnant with passion. And I fell in love with this product, the alchemy that transforms a single fruit into a wine. So at that time, I was studying agriculture. In Lyon, so I graduated at an engineer level, and then I went to Dijon in Burgundy to study enology, and I passed my national diploma of enology in 1994.
The interesting thing there is a lot of times the love of wine comes from family, but for you you discovered it on your own. How did your family, your parents, what was their reaction when you told them, I'm going into wine?
They were desperate. I think they were afraid. They were afraid I become a drunkard. Well, yeah. So, it was very, they didn't know about this world, and they didn't drink wine at that time. It's different now. But yeah, it was a complete discover for her.
Well, let's move a little bit ahead. I read that you worked in harvests in Oregon and in Australia. I was wondering if you could talk about those experiences.
Yeah, it was an internship at the end of my studies of enology. We have an experimentation, an experience to an intern, yeah. And I chose to go to Oregon because I wanted to visit the world, the wine world. And Oregon was really interesting for Pinot Noir. So I went to this country, and it was really magic. It's a very, very nice place, and it's very, very interesting. And then I went to Australia a few years later because I have a friend of mine that is settled in Oregon, and I went to make wine for 3 months.
If you can remember, what are some of the biggest differences between Alsace versus Oregon and Australia? Because they're such different parts of the world.
I think the most important difference is in France, in Alsace, we have a lot of rules, a lot of rules, and in United States and in Australia, you have the freedom of playing with the variety of trying new things, and we have very
regulated in Alsace. Yeah, yeah. You cannot do what you want, even on the labels. We have very strict regulations. We have not to put the name of the village bigger than the name of the varietal, and a lot of little things like that. And of course, also by the analogy aspect, yeah, yeah, where we do not have the right to do a lot of things which are allowed elsewhere.
What are the benefits of it? Because I mean, France makes the, I don't mind saying this, like if I have to pick the best wine in the world, every country is beautiful, but I have to pick number one, I would pick France. What are the advantages of having these strict rules, if any?
All these rules are the results of a long thousand years of winemaking and wine growing. So they are not just like this, just not too...
To make it boring. Yeah. It's not to bore us. It's simply to settle what generation after generation was probably the best way to do it for each type of region or varietal.
And they try to preserve the particularity, the style of the wines in every region of France. Alsace wines are never going to be like Burgundy or like Loire wines. They are We have our own varieties, our own rules for wine growing, for wine making, and that's it. And we keep our styles, even if sometimes we found ways to move a little bit, but the majority, the style of Alsace wines remains the same.
The important thing there is I look at Ontario, and we've tried sometimes to make Cabernet Sauvignon, and it doesn't work most years because we don't have the temperature for it. I think sometimes New World having rules is actually a good thing for helping the quality of the wine, and I think that would be one example of it. So let's move ahead to you and Pierre Spar. I'd be curious to hear, how did you guys come together?
Well, my first real job was in Alsace. It was a long time ago, in 1994. I worked first as a consultant in Alsace in a laboratory. We make analysis and give advice to wine growers, to winemakers. Then I get the other side. I've always wanted to make wine. So as soon as possible, I went to make wine with a negotiant in the Bas-Rhin, means in the north of Alsace. I stayed there for 10 or 12 years. And then I was hired by Maison Pierre Spar at the beginning of 1919. I immediately say yes to the owners of Maison Pierre Spar, because Pierre Spar is a very well known winery in Alsace. It's very old. It was founded in 1680, and the focus has always been on improving the work on grapes and the work and the quality of the wines. It was one of the first negotiations to have an association of wine growers, because we have our own vines, but we also buy grapes to around 50 wine growers. And it's a very ancient partnership. They are very old partners of Maison Pierre Spar, because they were gathered in these associations to improve the quality of the grapes we buy. We promote charter wines, and we make selection of soils. And it has begun a long time ago, and it was very particular to Maison Pierre Spar. So it was very interesting for me to come and to work for Maison Pierre Spar.
Speaking of work, I don't think I've ever asked a winemaker this. What sort of give and take goes on when you're working with your cellar team? How important is that relationship between you and everyone in the cellar?
It's very, very important. Making wine is not a bureaucratic work. It's not always the same. It's very exigent, very demanding. Like, for example, today we are bottling Crémant sparkling wine, and we had something wrong in the process yesterday, and today everybody had to go home at the end of the week at 5, and they will stay until 9 or 10 because it's not finished. So they do that because it's a good, we have a good relationship, and they know that it's really important to finish, and they will stay. So that's really important to have a good team, because sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's fun, and sometimes you are tired and it's harvest and you have to stay and you have to work more because the grapes are different this time, and we have to do something more. And they always stay, and they are always here, and that's really nice.
Corinne, before I ask you about how tired you are, I'm such a rude host. Introduce the other gentleman with you who is helping out a little bit. But by the way, Corinne, your English is so good. You were worried about it. Your English is so good. My French is horrible.
thank you. Yes, well, you can come. I will teach you French.
I would love it. But yes, is that François? I was only just introduce yourself for everyone.
François?
Oh. Yeah, so hello. So I'm François Fischer. I'm in charge of the export at the Pierre Spaar Winery, and I have the chance to be the most usual contact with our Canadian partners, American partners, and all over the world in other countries. It's a very interesting job because for me, I like to say it's I don't want to be presumptuous, but it was something like some imperators in the Middle Ages where they could say on their empire, the sun never goes down. And it's for me, it's a little bit the same. Late in the evening, I always check the last emails to see if there is something happening in America or Canada. And if I can answer immediately, I do it because you win a day when you answer the same evening in the night. And in the early morning, it's Japanese or Chinese people are the first who are sending mails or asking something. And so it's very interesting because you have very different type of products to sell on every part of the world. For example, in Canada, and we sell a lot of Gewürztraminer and Cremant. United States, it's also Cremant, but more Riesling. In Italy, surprisingly, we sell Gewürztraminer and Silvaner. It's really very, very different from one country to the other and what people are asking for. It's really every day a different new things and new opportunities, and we have the chance to have a very nice variety of products in Alsace in general, with the seven varietals, with sparkling wines, still wines, dry wines, sweeter wines. And Corinne is having a lot of work with all the different batches of grapes coming in during more than 1 month in September, October, and to really produce and propose a very nice range of different wines every year.
Well, I will say this, the wines of Alsace, the Canadian division, have been great, and to also to help set up this interview. And also for everyone listening, if you can't afford champagne, but you want a nice sparkling on a Tuesday night, get the Cremant. It's going to be like $21, $22. The depth, the complexity, it is, it's one of the best value wines out there. Sparkling, dry, red, white, whatever. It's at the top of the list. So I appreciate all the work you guys are doing. Corinne, you mentioned before about being tired. I'm curious, when are you, as a winemaker, when are you the most tired?
Well, during harvest. During harvest, it's sometimes 20 hours of work a day. So yeah, and but when you go home and you go to bed and you have the feeling that you have done everything possible to take the best of the grapes you have, you go to bed tired but happy.
Hey, listen, and that feeling of satisfaction of you know, job well done. What do people need to know about Gewürztraminer? Because it's a long name. It can intimidate people that don't know. It's a very powerful wine. And I love it because of the depth, and it just brings you something different. But for people who haven't tried Gewürztraminer, why should they get into that grape?
Gewürztraminer is the wine. I think people who don't like wine, who are always who are more used to other beverage, or they can come to wine with Gewürztraminer because it's sweet. It's always sweet. Like there is more than 10 grams per liter of sugar, around 50 sometimes, and this sugar is helps to reveal the aromas. It's a support for aromas, and Gewürztraminer means spicy wine. You have all the aromas you like, for example, at Christmas. You have cinnamon, you have anise étoilé.
Yeah, anise.
Anise, yeah.
Like pastis, what you use for pastis.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, with the stars, the stars form anise étoilé. Mm. Yeah. You have lychees, you have exotic fruits. So it's very complex, it's very intensive, very very intense. People put the nose in the glass, and it's it explodes because it's really, and it's really attractive. Even sometimes my daughter, she doesn't like wine, but with Gewürztraminer, she smells things interesting and attractive, and she likes the smell, for example. And in the mouth, it's not difficult to like it because it's not acid at all. It's the less acid wine in Alsace, so it's very easy to like. It's powerful, it's long-lasting in the mouth. Sometimes the more difficult is to associate it with something you eat. It's very pleasant for aperitif. It's very pleasant on dessert. It can go with a lot of dessert, like fruit dessert, an apple pie. And you can also drink it with exotic meal. Indian or Chinese or things like that, and most of the Gewürztraminer are good just like that for aperitif or even after the meal, just to have a good wine, and it's very pleasant.
And what I always do, I have this rule: if I pour someone Gewürztraminer, I tell them ahead of time, because if they don't know and they just take a sip without thinking about it, they always like, whoa, what just happened? So I always make sure to warn them. Moving, and by the way, great answer. It's so true about Gewürztraminer. Moving over to Riesling, what would you say are, and I don't want to do a full generalization because I know, you know, there's always differences, but in general, Alsace Riesling versus, say, German, what would be like the main differences in terms of taste?
Oh, between German and Alsace, well, Riesling is my favorite wine. It's the king of Alsace wine. I think Alsatian Riesling is more powerful. It's not because the yield are really lower in Alsace. So we are not looking for white wine just easy and. And light. We are looking for a powerful, fresh, rich, intense in aroma in the wine. So the yields are lower, and Riesling is the variety that reveals more the differences of the soil. And in Alsace, we have really the chance of having a mosaic of soils in a very small area. We have a lot of different soils, granite, limestone, gneiss, schist. Riesling is the ideal variety to reveal these differences in the soil. So you have more mineral taste in Riesling, and the aging of Riesling is really interesting because every year it changes, and if you buy 12 bottles and you open one each year, it's really interesting to see where it's going, and each time it's different, and each time it's more interesting and more pleasant.
Is there a vintage that sticks out in terms of one year that was the hardest for you, and on the other end, the one year where everything was made as easy as possible?
Let's talk about the easy first.
Sure, go for it.
Because the 2020 vintage was very nice. Everything was really very easy because the grapes were ripe, very ripe sometimes, very
clean.
Yeah. No disease at all. So it was very easy. Easy to elaborate wine, you were able to wait for the best moment to pick the grapes because the weather was okay all the harvest long. So voilà. Each time everything was very easy, and it gives a very powerful wine because there's more alcohol that we are used to. But as everything was very clean, the aromas are okay, and I think it will age. The 1990 vintage will age very, very good in time. The more difficult was maybe
2016. Yeah.
2016 was a vintage complicated because the weather was not good at that time during August and September. And we have a lot of Suzuki.
It's a fly.
Very little flies that attack the grapes, and we had to hurry a lot to pick the grapes very quickly as possible. And at Maison Pierre Spar, all the grapes are hand picked. So we had to hire a lot of wine pickers to go very quick before the Suzuki eats everything. So that was a very difficult work at that time. And sometimes I went to bed and I was not completely happy with what I've done.
Oh God, that would have been the tough sleep going to bed then.
Yeah.
You were saying your parents weren't into wine when you were in school. How are they now?
My parents love Alsatian wine, really. They used to at the beginning they drank red wines like Beaujolais, and now they only drink white wines. So and even a little bit of Pinot Noir. But no, they are simple. They love Grand Cru. My mother likes sweet wine, so she appreciated Gewürztraminer Grand Cru, even Vendange Tardive or Selection de Grenoble, which are really really sweet, like aperitif dessert wine. And my father is fond of Riesling, so he likes Riesling, and especially the selection of soils we have at Maison Pierre Spar is very fond of these wines. With Alsatian wine, it's very easy. Nobody can say I don't like Alsatian wine, because you have such a range of diversity of wine, from sweet, from fresh, acid, or sparkling. So you can always find what you want, what you like. It's compulsory.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted you on, is just you're the first Alsatian winemaker I've interviewed. Just I wanted to expose it to everyone listening to go and try it. And Maison Pierre Spar, there's plenty of that. I know locally here in Toronto and Ontario, we get a lot of your wines are available to the consumer. As we end this, Karine, I'm wondering, what's next? What do you hope for in the next couple of years, just for yourself as a winemaker?
I don't want something else. I'm just good where I'm happy where I am. It's only my second vintage at Maison Pierre Spar, so I'm really good at here. And what's interesting in my job, like every job who works with agriculture or fruits that are outside, every year is different. So we had 2020 that was very, very strong, very mature. 2021 was another challenge, because it was the wines were lighter, are lighter and with more acidity. So it's really a very interesting vintage for sparkling, for example. The Pinot Gris are wonderful. So every year is different, and I'm just okay like this. We are trying to elaborate a new assemblage,
new blends
for Crémant, for example, for the next few days. We have signed the HVAE. It's a new certification for sustainable agriculture. So from the 1991 vintage, all our wines are certified. So we are getting better and better, and we are always improving. So that's what makes the job interesting.
Karine, I really appreciate you doing this. Congrats on your success, on your wonderful journey. And again, Maison Pierre Spar are excellent wines. Fully recommend. Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, guys.
Goodbye. Thank you, everybody.
And I am back, and I'm going to give my normal extra, which is thanks so much, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm giving this extra because I just you heard the interview. Thank you so much for everyone who stuck around to the end. I did my best to edit out as much as of me as I could, but I appreciate you listening. We'll try to continue to do better with the sound quality, or maybe I'll just hop on a plane and fly over, because I'll be doing some other interviews with people from Alsace, from South Africa. Plus, I'm going to get back into some more local wine angles here in Southern Ontario. But you know the deal. You can find me, rate, review, and you can find this podcast at Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.